Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago on a gloomy winter day in January, a little bit warmer than usual. I look to my right, and lo and behold, it's a great one. Doug Tonis, how you doing?
We're just living the dream. You know, we're recording Saturday morning. Bears obviously got a big game tonight, so I don't know if we'll talk any Bears-Packers preview or not, but... Excited for that, having a little party, and all is good.
Isn't it great to see how this team, the Bears team, just before we get into the Bulls really quickly, to me, the best part about it is just the excitement across the city. People, I don't know if I mentioned this to you before on the last show, so please excuse me if I did, but I was walking out, I was on my way to watch the game with my dad. It was the last Packers game, actually. Got some gas before I took the long drive to the South, and I opened the door for a guy, and I had it on my Bears gear. He had on his Bears gear, and we just started talking. I just said, "Go Bears." He says, "Go Bears." Then we have like a 4-minute conversation on the game. Guy I'd never even met. You know, I would guess, you know, we probably don't have a ton in common. He was a lot younger than me. I love the magic of like sports to bring a city together like that. To me, that's the greatest thing. It's part of the reason I've been so disappointed in the Bulls, since I do think, you know, they are – the Bears and the Bulls are the teams that bring the city together.
Oh, come on, right? Now.
You know, the Cubs and the Sox tear it apart.
Yeah, the Cubs bring then, the city together. What do you mean? When the Cubs are doing well.
Are you serious? Yeah. You don't know my family where I come
well,
from.
You got a weird family.
No, I don't.
No, Doug, I mean, you, like you –
You think Sox fans want the Cubs to win? Are you serious?
No, I don't think that. It's just there's only like 12 Sox fans and you have 10 of them in your family. Like I don't – I think I mean, I don't mean to like rip on the Sox because I was a Sox fan growing up, but like – There's not like, I don't know. I don't know any Sox fans who are like die hard against the Cubs anymore because it's just the Sox are so bad, like so consistently and they're going on. And I know they're there. Like how I make fun of you, how you find like the weird niche things. I know there are a lot of Sox fans like that, but there's just not that many Sox fans. Like if the Cubs are doing really well and the Sox are having a normal year, which is a bad year, then it's just like the percentage is like 90-10. You know, like, you know, and I guess if the Sox are doing really well and the Cubs are doing poorly, you know, maybe it gets up to like 50-50. But it's just not like an even type of fan base thing, right? Like there are just a lot more Cubs fans.
Well, let me just tell you one quick story about this, because I've always made this point and I think it's 100% true. The baseball in the city tears the city apart. Like, I understand what you're saying, Doug.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, too. You're right. Like, there is a conflict. It's not the same. Yeah. Everyone loves it.
When the Sox won the World Series, so I'm from the South Side originally. I grew up in Oak Lawn, southwest suburbs, but all my family was from the South Side. They're all Sox fans for the most part. And then my brother and I became Cub fans. Not only Cub fans, but the most loud, obnoxious Cub fans you could possibly ever imagine, from grammar school to high school at St. Lawrence High School and on. So when the Sox won the World Series in 2005, which was probably the worst 3-year sports fan period of my life, when you think the Cubs blew it and with the Bartman game, and then the Red Sox won it next year, and that was the only other fan base that we really could hang out with and talk to in terms of pain. And then the Sox won the World Series in 2005. I had 320 messages when they won the World Series, of people I hadn't even talked to in years, just talking crap to me. 320 until my phone couldn't take anymore. How's that for a story? So don't tell me how the city, baseball friends the city together.
Again, that's your own family situation. But can I tell you a quick Bears story before
it goes? Yes, please.
Right, yes. So my company, we did something this year called the 12 Days of Christmas. And so what they did is they had a kind of like a, you signed up for it and there was like a raffle and then the winners got to pick a gift and the company went all out and they had like amazing gifts. Like one of the gifts was like World Cup tickets. One was like a 75-inch, like super high end Samsung TV, and some other stuff. But one of them was Bears Packers tickets for the game in Chicago.
Okay.
And one of the guys who reports to me at work won the Bears Packers tickets. Oh, and of course, you know, it goes to the game. And he's like, this was the greatest game of my life. This is the greatest sporting event I will ever attend in my life. Like he knows it. And it's true, right? Like, like you saw the Bears beat the Packers basically to win the division with one of the most insane comebacks in history. And he's like, I couldn't even talk for like 2 days because I was like screaming so loud. And yeah, like everyone is there and they're like, everyone's hugging each other and everyone's going crazy. And like, you know, so like sports when they're at their best are like really just this unbelievable type of thing. And, you know, this Bears season has been really special in bringing a lot of moments like that. You know, I talked earlier, like, I don't know how far the Bears will go in the playoffs. It wouldn't surprise me if they win or lose tonight. You know, it's like they played twice in the last few weeks and, you know, both games went down to the final play. So it's a toss-up game, right? You know, I know people have different emotionality, but the reality is it's a toss-up game. So it could go either way. And, you know, I hope they win, obviously. But even if they don't win, like, this season has been so tremendous. I hung out with people almost every weekend to watch the Bears, and it's the first time in forever I've done that. You know, and I long for the days that the Bulls would be interesting enough that, you know, you and I even would be like, let's get a party together and watch the Bulls on a regular cadence. You know, like if they're really good, we probably would do that. But it's like you're just not really going to make plans around a team
the 500
in like 37 wins, you know, like you're just not. So anyway, you know, it's like if we hope the Bulls can do something similar over time, but you know, it's been really special to watch the Bears this year and have a good year and just, you know, watch the excitement build. So good luck to the Bears tonight. Hope it goes well.
We'll get into at the end. We'll get into just a little bit more Bears talk to wrap it up. But I do want to let's get into the beloved Bull.
Let's do it.
They're hot again, 14-17. we'll get into the situation where the game was canceled, which was beyond weird. But before we do that, I want to play a game with you, Doug. And my apologies to the audience if I talked about this before, but it's a game I played. Do you remember the Lost in the Forest fast food game I like to play? Did we ever go over this?
I don't think we did this one. I don't remember this. I remember the game. Great. You give me a random team from like the 80s that has some tie-in somehow to the Bulls, and I would have to guess their record. And you know, I think I was so on that one. You know, I had one really good guess. I had one that I think it was the Portland one. I was way off. I remember they had their lottery pick, and I assumed they were really bad, but it turned out they had it through a trade, and in your basketball historian mind fooled me.
Okay.
But you know, fun stuff.
All right. I'm going to bring that segment back for the next show. I just got to get a team. I like that segment. I completely forgot about it. We're going to make that part of the show at least once a week. All right. So you get lost in the forest, Doug. Not for a day, not just overnight, like two full weeks. Okay.
Okay.
You with me? Yep. You survive. Obviously, you're in a forest, so you're not going to be dying. It's not like you're in a desert. But you're eating whatever you can, berries, critters, you know, leaves, roots, whatever it takes, whatever it takes. 2 weeks of wandering.
Yeah.
You finally see a clearing ahead. You stumble out of the forest. Right there in the clearing, you've got $100 in your pocket. You're hungry. You know, not hospital hungry, but you need real food immediately hungry. What fast food chain do you want there waiting for you?
How national of a fast food chain does it have to be? Like, can I pick like a niche place that only, that has
don't
like
say In-N-Out Burger. I don't want to hear that one.
Like it's, dude, I don't like hamburgers, so I'm definitely not going to say In-N-Out Burger.
All right, well, let's.
I mean, I just wasn't sure. Like, are you limiting this to like major places like McDonald's and Taco Bell, or could I be like Vasco's Peri Peri, which is like got like two restaurants in the world?
Definitely not that. It's got to be something that's a national chain.
So something well known.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Why don't you tell me yours? Because I got to think about this for a second. So,
mine varies by the day. I would probably say Chipotle. I love Chipotle. Probably my favorite fast
that was one of my right first now. Thoughts too was Chipotle because like I'm starving, right? Like maybe not like starving, but I'm really hungry, and like Chipotle's food is going to also be ready immediately.
Yeah,
like, you know, like I don't want to sit and wait 40 minutes for a Lou Malnati's pizza at this point. Like I want to get in there.
Yeah, Lou Malnati's is definitely not what I would consider fast food.
Like, not
to
fast
be honest with you, I would say like Five Guys, but you got to take out like a second mortgage. I'm not sure $100 would get you fries and a drink. It's so friggin' expensive. Do you know what I'm talking about, Five Guys? You ever been there?
I don't like burgers, which I just said. So I'm familiar with Five Guys, but like...
But they have peanuts.
I'm allergic to peanuts, so that also doesn't do much for me.
All right, Five Guys goes
but
my
yeah,
son's allergic
I get
to peanuts.
That Five Guys.
It really hurt my trips to Five Guys. Go on.
Did you know, this is just information for you. If you're allergic to peanuts, you can still eat things that are fried in peanut oil.
I was not aware of that.
You can Google this to fact check it.
Probably would have saved me a lot of time.
It's crazy. Sorry for the swear word there. Sorry, people, earmuffs. I learned that when I was like 45. So I was allergic to peanuts and avoiding peanut oil my whole life. And then what it is, you're allergic to the protein in the peanuts, but peanut oil is just straight fat. Like all the protein is stripped out, so you're not actually allergic to it. You got to be a little careful if you go to like a place that doesn't have processed peanut oil. So like if you went to a like a mom and pop Thai restaurant where they're doing something on their own, there's maybe a teeny bit of risk that there's like, it's still very small, but Thai food also just generally just has peanuts in it. But if you go to like, any of these places that fry their fries in peanut oil, you're fine, even though you're allergic to peanuts. So just a tip for you and Ben, going forward.
Awesome. We're probably, what, 15 minutes in? We haven't even talked about the
Bulls. I'm going to go with Culver's. Culver's is my answer.
Oh, interesting. I think Culver's is overrated, but regardless, that's a good choice. What happens if it's just, take a step back. Let's just say it's McDonald's, Wendy's, or Burger King. What would you
do? Wendy's. Wendy's. Really? Not even close.
Okay. All right. So let's take Culver's. Give me your base Culver's. The thing you like the least, but which would be good if you've never gone there. To like, what would you get? What's your favorite thing?
Dude, I only eat chicken, so there's only one thing I eat there. Again, it's like it's a burger.
Gosh
place.
Darn,
I
don't eat any of the burgers. Working.
But right. Yeah, it's not helping you. I don't have much of a palate.
This analogy's not working.
The number one thing there for me is the buffalo tenders, and then I'm really just deciding whether I'm getting cheese curds or fries on the side, which are both fantastic at Culver's. The onion rings are pretty solid too, but you know the cheese curds are so good that I rarely would go onion rings there.
My son loves that too. All right, so cheese curds. Maybe we can make this an analogy then with the cheese curds. And do you like their fries?
The fries are great. I love the crinkle cut fries. You know, crinkle cut fry is really great because it's got a better like salt to potato ratio because you've got like more skin with the ridges, and I think that like really fires it up.
All right, all right. This is gonna screw up my whole analogy here.
Okay.
Regardless, all right. So you got Culver's. Let's bring it to the Bulls. So we've been wandering in the forest of Acme.
Sure.
Let's take one more step back. Have you noticed that there's a lot of modest celebration over the last few games? There's every show I like has been talking about how great, you know, he's taking the next step. There's an insane amount of excitement. Like I would counter a little bit too much excitement. And this is my point in the analogy I'm trying to make here. We've been basically wandering through the forest, you know, of Acme for 4 years, and we've had to see Patrick Williams with the draft pick, and he's only 19. All the stuff that we heard over and over again.
He's only 24 now, right?
He's only 24 now, but I'm saying his rookie year. You remember that rookie year, Doug? You and I both.
Every year, whatever age Pat Williams is, we just insert he's only in front of it. To excuse the fact that he sucks balls at basketball.
There was like some kind of magic that swept over the entire fan base that everybody was just so excited that it wasn't a Gar Pax pick, I think, that they just blindly thought that this guy was
one of the greatest set of drafting general managers ever, by the way, Gar Pax.
No doubt about that.
But yeah, we were super excited that our elite drafting front office went away. Like, I don't know. That was a super weird one. People are so mad about the Doug McDermott pick, which was indeed like the worst draft decision they've ever made, that they just got caught up in like these guys suck at drafting.
I just argued with Big Dave about this not long ago.
Oh no,
he's still in the league, believe it or not. It's not like he was a bust. Anybody who's not in the top 10 who's been in the league 10 years is not a bust. I said this over.
Yeah, that's fine. He's not a bust, but it was just like you traded two picks, you traded up for him. You could have taken Zach LaVine if you're going to trade up, you know, like it just like there's like a lot of other stuff there. Like it's not that Doug McDermott was individually so bad. It was just all the other circumstances around it that made it even worse. Anyway, let's get to your point. Sorry.
Again,
we are super excited about Pat Williams, even though he sucks. And now we see Modest.
We've been
Modest
in the forest. Eight critters for four years.
He's Culver's coming out of the forest of Pat Williams.
That's what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say is that we after coming out of the forest, we see a fast food place, and Modest is definitely better than Patrick Williams. But I'm not. There's suddenly this celebration. Like I think he's good. He's 21. He makes 21-year-old mistakes. He's not Derrick Rose good. He's not Derrick Rose second year good. He's not like. I don't see enough signs to say I'm certain this guy's going to be an all-star. And I think we're all guilty as fans a little bit of kind of over-evaluating or overestimating how good he's been. And I heard a show, it might have been Bull Central, and it wasn't Hayes, who I love that show. But he had another guy on the show. My apologies, whoever it was, and I'll get the name right the next time. He was talking about how great he played in the Detroit game. Essentially, that's what I heard. Modest, he played very good offensively. He was horrific defensively. That first half, I don't know if you saw my tweets. Did you read that tweet I had about the first half, Doug? Probably not again.
I did not see that.
This show should just be me repeating my tweets and then that you ignore and getting your comments on it. Cause I really liked what I said here.
I like the fact that you like somehow I'm ignoring your tweets as if like I should have an obligation to read all of your tweets. Like
they should tweets be.
Is just like, should just be the central focus of what I do in life.
There should be a function. I think there is an X where you can just have my tweets sent to you via text message. I think that'd be a good idea. Anyhow, what do you think of that? I said I'm not prone to hyperbole, but I'm deadly serious here. That first half of front court defense was as bad as I've ever seen. Disgraceful effort execution. If I owned a team, I'd fire every decision maker and put Vooch, P. Will, and a Prius for the ride home.
I did read that tweet, by the way. Okay. I read that, but you were talking about angry. Modest, and Modest wasn't mentioned in that tweet. So
I didn't mention him in the tweet. But anybody wants to see it, but
I saw the video too. I was confused about the tweet because Modest was featured in a lot of the clips, and like he wasn't in the tweet. So I'm like, I don't know. This doesn't like seem to make sense to me. But I did see that. Yes,
so you're so smart, that. Doug, because you got a little bit to what I was doing there. I didn't add Modest there because if I would have.
Yeah, you would have gotten flamed, and you didn't want to deal with the backlash.
Did not want to deal with it at all.
I'm just going to put it in the video, though, make it subtle.
But I put it in the video for smart people like you to take notice that Modest was awful defensively. And he had, I think, 3 rebounds in that game. Guys, he's our starting 4. And there was a highlight. If you go to that tweet, look at the highlight. I hear a lot of people, he should be a 3. He's a 3. He is not quick. Laterally, he is not fast enough to guard 3s. Laterally, there's 2 types of quickness. Horizontal, which he has. He's awesome as a shot blocker. I love it. I've seen players coach players like this many years in my life. And we're constantly amazed how many blow-bys we see because they're not quick laterally. There's just some players like this. He's one of them. He's a 4 in this league. He has to guard bigger, and he can't do it. And that was, to me, the perfect example, and I highlighted as many plays as I could. Now, Vooch was a complete disaster. And what I'm getting at is I think we're all falling victim to this, let's be excited about something on the Chicago Bulls. And no doubt, you should be excited. I think he's going to be good. We have jumped the shark in terms of his potential because on the defensive end, it's been terrible. Absolutely freaking terrible. Period. With the exception of shot blocking, he's doing that very well. But everything else, rebounding, physicality, staying in front of his assignment, getting lost on backdoor cuts has been freaking terrible. And it's about time somebody said it. I'm saying it. I'm calling it out. What say you?
I think you've said that all before. I don't know if this is new information from you. But
well, it's a little bit more anger. And
it is a little angry. I don't have the same level of anger as you do about it. I agree with you that he's a 4. I agree that he has a lot of growth he needs to do defensively still. But these are young player mistakes. Like Derrick Rose was a terrible defender in his second year. And then people are like, Derrick Rose is a terrible defender. And by his MVP season, he was actually a pretty good defender. But his reputation from his first couple years had followed him around. And people are like, oh, he's terrible. But it's just you make these mistakes when you're a young player, especially the positional ones. And then the strength ones, like he's definitely added a good amount of muscle this year, and he'll probably do that next year as well. Like that's a thing that takes time, right? He can't fix that. He can't fix the physicality thing today. Like there's nothing he can do to be more physical today. He can't just be 20 pounds stronger today. Like it just can't. He can't like just add 30% to his strength overnight. Like it's impossible. That's going to take a couple off seasons. And so, like, the things you point out that are bad, like, I agree with you. I'm just not, like, panicked about them.
Maybe I should calm down.
And offensively, I would just say, like, maybe the flip side is, like, I'm not that excited about him offensively as maybe some people are. Like, you see growth, but, like, you know, he's not, like, killing anything offensively. Like, so, I agree. Like, he's, right now, to me, he projects into, like, a third or fourth best player in your starting lineup. Like that, like if I had to guess what the outcome is, that's what I would guess. It's not impossible that he could become like a number 2. I guess it's not impossible he could become a number 1. I mean, I wouldn't have picked Jimmy Butler as being a number 1 2 years into his career. So, you know, guys can make leaps you don't expect to happen And he definitely has a foundation that he could do that. But that's like the 1% chance, right? Like most guys in this, with his kind of profile right now, don't make that type of leap. So, you know, I'd guess he's going to be between a third or fourth best player in the starting lineup, probably more trending towards a third than a fourth, which is a very good player, a guy that is like maybe makes an all-star game in his career, maybe doesn't. You know, that's what I would guess where he ends up. But it could go better than that. Like it's if you told me, I mean, we went in the future, you know, future Fred comes back and says, Doug, Matis Buzelis made like 10 all-star games. How surprised are you? You know, I'd be a little surprised, but I wouldn't be like, wow, there's no way I could see that happening. You know, I wouldn't expect it, but I wouldn't be like, wow, there's no way that could happen. Like you could see how it could happen. But it's just not the most likely outcome. The most likely outcome is he's I think like a very good player, but not a build around this guy type player.
Yeah, I definitely don't see that. I guess that's what I'm getting at. After 2 years in, I don't understand this idea that
positivity like, people, right? Like, oh, like who are the best guys on the team that you'd be most excited about right now? It would be Matis and Giddy.
I'd say it's a Giddy number. Well, I still have Kobe up there when he's healthy. I think Kobe, this is a lost year with all the injuries. I don't feel that way.
Yeah,
I do.
That's fine. But let's ignore Kobe for Matis. You can toss Kobe in that mix. Like, I think it's just as fair to put Kobe in that mix as Matis and Giddy. But Matis and Giddy are a little younger, so they've got maybe a little bit more growth that you would expect to get out of them. Actually, I think maybe Kobe and Giddy are about the same age now that I'm thinking about it without looking it up. I don't know. Regardless, ignoring that, like
Kobe's fine. 25.
If you want to toss Kobe in that mix too, I'm okay with that. But so yeah, like and you will see some people toss Kobe in that mix, like build around these guys. And you say that because it's just like they're the highest upside young guys on the team, and like what else are you going to do? You know, like I went on our show last time and I said, you know, I'd be totally open to trading Giddy if we could get a bunch for him. And I think you said probably correctly, like no one's going to give you a ton for Giddy. I'd be totally open to trading Matis if I could get a bunch for them. Like if we were willing to do a real rebuild and just acknowledge that what we're doing is not going to go anywhere, I'd be willing to trade all these guys because none of them are number one or number two options in the most likely scenario. Giddy maybe has a fringe chance at it. Like he's doing a lot of stuff really well. But I'd be willing to trade any of these guys. Like there's just nothing really here that's going to build you towards a, you know, consistently 50 plus win team. And so if you don't have that, it's like, well, you got to figure out a way to add assets. You know, I keep talking about that every time we talk. It's like, you got to add assets. You can't just change your current assets into different current assets that are about the same value and shuffle the deck chairs and think you're going to go from, you know, 39 wins to 50 wins. But that is consistently what our front office tries to do. You know, we'll just shuffle deck chairs and hope we can make big gains. Like you're going to have to take a real step back. And, you know, they talked about doing that and they talked about not skipping steps. Like for a team that talks about, did you see my tweet about not skipping steps? Speaking of tweets?
No, could you repeat it?
I'm not going to go look it up. But I basically said our front office talks about not skipping steps. Like, you know, they say that. But that's all they do is try to skip steps. Like, they don't want to take a true step back and actually acquire assets and trade, you know, valuable people for future assets that are going to be more valuable in the future, knowing that by the time you have enough pieces to do something, you're going to have to re-sign these guys and they're no longer going to be valuable assets because they're going to be on this, like, new big market deal. And it's not going to work out. But we won't make any trades to ever trade something valuable. We wait until we've lost all the on-court value to make a move with someone. And because of that, we never add actual future assets. But what we need to do is take current assets, turn them into future assets, and then let time allow those future assets to mature. But we just keep swapping deck chairs, and that's why like we are not going anywhere. It's incredibly difficult without just getting absurdly lucky to take the approach we are taking and get somewhere. Like we could, like if we draft the next Jokic in the second round, or we draft a superstar with pick number 14, like those things happen from time to time. You know, like if we draft like the next Giannis at 15, then we could turn this whole thing around. But that's just like a super unlikely path towards doing it. Like systematically, we aren't doing anything to increase our odds of ever increasing the asset base.
The bigger point I wanted to make and to wrap this whole modest discussion up is we're all in agreement. He's clearly one or two in terms of, hey, this is a piece you could have going forward, right? I think we're both in agreement there.
He's exactly the most exciting in terms of what will happen. He has the most unknown future potential.
Most potential. That's the best way of putting it. Like right now, he could be a first team All NBA player. I don't think it's going to happen.
Don't think so. But it's in the future. Possibly.
It's in the cards. You see in the cards. There, athletically, everything. He's got all that. My counter is, I think there are significant defensive limitations that aren't being discussed. I think it's masked a little bit by his ability to block shots, which is really good. And I think
shows in the stat sheet.
No doubt. I think he's top 15 in the league on that, where maybe some people don't watch as much as I do. I'd like to watch is when a shot goes up, how is he boxing out? How is he physically putting himself in position to get that rebound? I'm just going to tell you guys, honestly, he's terrible at it. He's absolutely terrible at it. And
better box out, Fred, Patrick Williams or Modest Bozelas?
I would say Modest. Patrick Williams is one of the worst. Although he's been better, I think this year quietly.
He's gotten quietly a little bit better, but like Patrick Williams is maybe. I don't know that I've really just paid attention to people boxing out that frequently, but Patrick Williams is so bad. It like you can't miss it. You can't not see it. Like I've never seen someone so bad where he's just like guys just like walk around him. Maybe not as much this year, but in the past, like they just would walk around him. Like he's like not even paying attention. Like I'm like, oh my God. Like
Doug, you're so right. I had a coach in high school who would always talk about every time there was like an offensive rebound, dunk or put back. He's like, that's a crime scene. And you have to go back to the tape and determine who is guilty of the crime. And I always remember that and took it to heart when I watched Patrick Williams in his rookie year. Let me just tell you, I was probably at about 250 in plays where that guy was the problem. You know, an offensive rebound was acquired and put back, and it was his man who did it. So where was I going with this?
But Modest is not a good box out guy. He's a lot of the little things he's not doing yet.
I think we're underestimating the significant defensive limitations unless he gets significantly stronger and significantly. I think he's a tweener. The Bulls have got their two best players in Giddey and Modest are kind of like so incredibly difficult to build around a contending team. I always like to say this. It's a tightrope, and these guys have a Muddy Timberlands, you know, are doing a tap dance with Muddy Timberlands. It's difficult for anybody, any competent front office, to build a championship team around these two guys. Because what I think unequivocally now is with Modest, if he's going to be your four, and I think he has to be your four, you have to have a kick-ass defensive center. Easier said than done. Like, you think that it's easy to find a guy who's just going to be happy playing defense as a center, like a Gobert type? I mean, the Bulls would look, I think, have 10 more wins if Gobert was a center. I really believe that. That he would fix so much of what's wrong. Look at the off numbers of Gobert in Minnesota. He's like a one-man team when it comes to that defense. So I'd like your thoughts when I'm trying to say that. Do you feel or you agree with me that building – I like Giddey too, and these guys are going to put up numbers. They're really good. But building a winner around these guys is so freaking difficult because you have to cover up their flaws on a defensive end. That's all I'm trying to say. Do you agree with that?
Maybe with some caveats. Let me start with any two guys as talented as Modest and Giddey are nowhere near building a championship team. So you need two guys better than both those guys to build a championship team. And if we had two guys better than both those guys on this team and we had those guys, like, I think it might be fine. Like, I don't know, like name any two guys better than those two guys and put them on this team and then ask yourself how good the team would be. And I think it would be pretty good. Now, one of those guys would probably need to be a defensive center. But like, you know, say you had Evan Mobley on this team. And then you had Donovan Mitchell. I mean, maybe we don't want a point guard.
Evan Mobley is a good one, though. The Bulls, I think, would be significantly better with Evan Mobley.
Yeah. So say you had Victor Wembanyama on this team. And then Giddey and Modest were your number two and number three guys. Like, I think you'd have a great team. At least. So I guess what I'm saying is like the problem, like there is a fit problem. You're not wrong. Like the fit problem is there. These guys are a little bit hard to build around. But the bigger problem is that they just aren't good enough. Like the bigger problem is you need two guys better than these guys. And that's like a much bigger problem and a much more harder problem to solve than the fact that these guys don't fit super well together. The thing I'd also say with Modest, like I think everything you said is right, but I'm just going to go back to what I said earlier, is like a lot of the things you said, I feel have a good chance of resolving themselves over the next 2 years. I think he'll get stronger over the next 2 years. I don't think he'll be a tweener. I think he'll develop into a natural four. I think he will get better at boxing out. I think maybe, I don't think he's going to become like elite at it, but I think like all those little traits where you get a little lost and you don't know where to be, and like some of those things he's doing now, like I completely agree with your assessment. I just think those are things that a lot of players who are in their first or second year of the league do. And by the time you get to your third or fourth year of the league, you're just a lot better at them. And you know your opponents and you know the league better. You know what the other players are going to do. Like there's just like a lot of that that just comes by playing and being in the league longer. So I think I agree with all the things you said about Matis. I'm a little more hopeful that those things get resolved over time. You know, but it's not a guarantee, right? Like I would have said the same thing about Patrick Williams in 2 years in, and it's a little better now, but like he's worse now than he was in his rookie season, probably, like holistically overall. So, you know, guys don't always just make this big path upwards, or sometimes they make a path upwards, but it's just small iterative incremental improvements and there's not any major improvement.
The only counter to that is I do feel defensive instincts, that's something that you usually see really early.
Like, well, that's why I like the shot blocking. You know, so like the shot blocking instinct is there, and that's why I think some of these other things will be there. But I think maybe to your point is like the rebounding, you usually come, if you're a good rebounder, you usually come into the league as a good rebounder.
Absolutely, and he's not.
And he's not.
He's Patrick Williams. That was an issue with him, and it's never gotten really better. I mean, it's gotten better than where it was because it was abysmal. It's gone from abysmal to bad. Like that's the issue I see. And a lot of my friends are like, Fred, calm down. Look at, you know, he's a great athlete. He'll figure it out. And that's not even remotely true, dude. Like Zach LaVine is a great athlete. He's always been a horrible defender. He doesn't have good instincts on that side. He doesn't play, that position great.
I will give Matis maybe this. Like, so we both talked a lot about how he's not that strong yet and he's got a lot of strength. And we know he bulked up some this offseason. We expect him to do that some more and get stronger over the next two off seasons, right? Would you agree with that? So I think with that, that gives him more of an edge to be more physical and do better as a rebounder. Like in comparison, Patrick Williams, I mean, he needed to add some strength when he came into the league, but he came into the league much more filled out. And so I think like some of those reasons he was a bad rebounder are different than some of the reasons Matis is a bad rebounder. I still think like usually if you're going to be good at it, you'll be good at it right away. But I think there's maybe a little bit more reason to be hopeful that Matis makes. I don't think he's ever going to be a great rebounder, but I do think he will improve in this area as he gets stronger and as he can play more physically. Like I don't think he can play a physical brand of basketball right now at the power forward position, but it wouldn't shock me if in 2 years he's able to play much more physically than he is today.
I hope you're right because we need it. And I did, speaking of Patrick Williams, I did highlight, encourage everyone to go to my Twitter feed. I don't know if you saw that one, Doug, where I highlighted three plays from the 16 minutes that Patrick Williams had on the defensive end that were like some of the three most egregious, pathetic defensive plays you'll see all in the second quarter. Did you see that one? I got to send it to you if you haven't because I think it's brilliant.
I saw that. I mean, you had all three of those in a row. Yeah, I watched them all and I saw all your videos. I was just confused about you not mentioning Matis and thought we were going a different direction, but yeah. Look, no one's got to convince me that Patrick Williams is awful. Like, I don't think anyone has to convince anyone. Like there might be a couple people hanging on out there who still think he might be something someday, but that group is got that bandwagon is got to just be down to a couple individuals at this point. Like I don't think anyone expects much there.